continue the public hearing on Senate Bill 5517, Oregon Judicial Budget. Welcome, everybody. Excuse me. You want me to do that over? Yeah, we'll just skip it. I don't have that many words left in me. We want to wrap up our family law program outcomes presentation with Ernie Nazarol. But before we call him up, we'll ask if staff has anything.
The same today, sir.
I'm sorry. I don't want to listen to her.
Oh, well, I'm sorry. I just thought of a speech and I don't.
Where's Ernie from?
The middle of nowhere.
Middle of nowhere.
Yeah, according that's to the governor.
Well, that's a different story.
Mayor committee members, a lot of people don't want to hear from me. For the record, my name is Ernie Mazarol. I'm the court administrator from Jefferson, Crook, in Deschutes County. That's the central Oregon area, not just Deschutes County. I'm here to address our efforts to evaluate family courts, and I have three reports to review with you. The first is a report we did in 1995 on family characteristics profiles of what we were experiencing in the family court. The second is court coordination of human services, which we conducted in 1997. And the last one, we're just now starting to ask the very difficult question, the most difficult question of them all, and that is, are families better off in the family court system? Why do we have it? Do we really need it? And we're starting to develop a framework for that now, and we're working with the National Center for State Courts. Just a few points. I have a lot of material to cover. I'll give a little history of each report, and then I'll touch on the highlights of the report, and I won't go into much detail at all. And I'd like to try and limit my remarks to 15 minutes. I've prepared a summary for your review, and I've had a two-page executive summary for you that I'll give you. And also included in here are the reports themselves in full detail, so it'll give you a chance to go back and take a look at them if you would like more information.
Do you want that passed down?
Give them to us. We need to get them. Always off of them. You never do it.
The legislative authorization for family courts occurred in 1993, and we started our family court in Deschutes County in May of 1994. And what we did first was we started bundling cases, bringing all the cases together on a family, and that proved to be very labor-intense because our system is not family-driven. It's case-by-case-driven, so we had to spend a lot of time researching these files, which we still do on a daily basis. Then once we got the family together, we assigned it to one judge, and all the circuit court judges participated. This was prior to court consolidation. After a year, we decided to research the families to find out what type of profiles these families had, and you'll see that in tab one. Also on the cover page, there's an outline that I'll give you the summary. Basically, the limitations with the study that we did was that we had a small sample population that we looked at. High and low risk families were determined by the number of court cases. That's how we distinguished them. Findings were limited to the court records, and the agency referrals are probably understated. We looked at 28 families. There were 51 adults and 59 children in those families. They generated 124 cases, and you could see most of them, a third of them were criminal, in restraining order and working their way down. Seven families generated 64 cases. They made up 52% of what was coming through, and we designated them as the high-risk families. We went in and we looked at the criminal cases to see what type of crimes there were. 50% were drug and alcohol, 12% sex abuse, and 12% assault. And of the high-risk families, of those seven families that were designated high-risk, they were referred to 40% of the services, and they were always referred to adult corrections. They averaged 6.7 years in the court system from entry to exit, 2.6 children per family, and 32 years of age per adult. Well, while the low-risk families, those other 21 families, they averaged 3.3 years in the system, almost two children, and basically 30 years of age for an adult. And families most frequently entered our court system through a criminal case. We were expecting it to be a juvenile case, but 86% of the time it was a criminal case. This research, after we did this, drove home the need for system-wide coordination. We felt the system needed to be lined up, not just the courts, where we looked at the family comprehensively, but also the schools and the human service agencies. And what we did was we started this discussion locally about the court coordinating services, and there was quite a bit of debate about it. We concluded three things based upon the debate we had locally. One is that the statutes allow court coordination of services. If you look at ORS 3.417, it clearly gives statutory authority for the court to coordinate those services, so we felt there was strong legislative intent there. Secondly, family members end up in the court system. That's the system where they eventually all wind up, and there wasn't another system that that occurred in. And the third thing was that the court has the authority and jurisdiction to order sanctions and to bring parties and agencies together both legally and administratively, and no one else had that authority. So we went to the E-Board, and we requested in September of 95 funding for a family court advocate position to coordinate the services under the court's control. LFO recommended funding for that position, and we were also requested to, it was approved, and then we were requested to come back with an evaluation report as to whether or not it worked. And we prepared that and presented to the Public Safety Ways and Means Subcommittee in 1997, our report, which is under task two. Limitations of that report was that there were no funds authorized for that research. There was a limited time. We had to do it within a year. We had a lack of sophisticated research techniques. We used three techniques. We created a database to track these families because OGIN was unable to. We did 24 telephone interviews with participants in the system, and we also asked the Commission on Children and Families to conduct a confidential questionnaire for us so we could get some outsider looking in. And the last limitation we had was it was a snapshot in time. These are families frozen in the system when we took this evaluation. And basically, we looked at 32 families. Of those 32 families, 19 had gone to the treatment team, the coordination team. And those 19 families, there were 50 children, mostly under the age of 7. Half of them were in home, and half of them were out of the home in substitute care. Strong influence, again, of drug and alcohol and domestic violence. The agencies that were involved most frequently, and numerous agencies were involved, but the ones most frequently were SOSCS, Parole and Probation, and Human Services. And if I could for a minute, I'd like to talk a little bit about these agencies and the funding. It's kind of interesting when you look at SOSCS, state agency, state-funded, get some federal money, Deschutes County Parole and Probation, state-funded, county-managed, Deschutes County Human Services, county-managed, county funds, state funds, federal funds. So we're crossing all these lines here, and it gets really complicated structurally. The status of those 19 families in treatment, 2 had successfully completed, 12 were doing very well, and they were on a track of successful completion. 4 were unsuccessful. They hadn't been revoked by the court yet, but the remaining one, last person, last family, had been revoked. So we're on a 75% completion rate. Schools, children in schools, the school said in 7 of the families, children were doing real well in school. 4 families, they were doing poorly, and in 8 families, they were preschool. Several trends came out. Schools are an integral part of the delivery system. You know, schools were left out in our counties, and now they're a part of it, and they're fashioning programs to help these kids. They didn't understand what was going on until they could sit in this treatment team and find out from a broad perspective what was happening, and it really helped them be able to deliver services to those children. Council need and deserve involvement and full involvement in the system. They can help make the system less adversarial if they're at the table, and they can also help their clients understand the need to cooperate with agencies and to work on their treatment plan. So council need to be there. Less court delay is preferred, considerable dysfunction in the family, and basically we're working to improve efficiencies and operational structures. You can see on the next page what the Commission on Children and Families found out from the different agencies and the schools, et cetera. They sent out 87 questionnaires, and we got a 40% return rate. And 10 being the highest level of satisfaction. Benefits families, 8.19. Benefits agencies. Communication has improved between agencies and the court. We have improved coordination. We're designing things to, we're designing, designing plans to meet family needs. In the low end, which we don't argue with at all, is cases don't move through the system as quickly as they should, through the court system. So we're trying to analyze that, and we agree with that. There's a lot of dysfunction in these families, and when you start bundling these cases and bringing everybody together, it can be very complicated. So we do want to speed the system up, and we want to try and exit people out, but at the same time, we want to make sure that families have an opportunity to meet with these treatment teams and take the time that it needs to help them succeed.
Brady, what page are you on?
I'm sorry, on the
second page.
On the second page of this right here.
Okay.
Based on our findings, the 69th Legislative Assembly continued the program and also expanded it to Jackson County because Jackson County was also ready to begin it. That ended our evaluation requirements. But two really important things occurred after that, after session. The first is that our report that I just talked to you about was published in the National Journal. That was the first thing, and the second thing was House Bill 3737 created family law advisory councils for each judicial district, and what they had to do was to develop integration plans for how they were going to work with these families by January 1 of 99, and they had to have community input and agency input in order to do that, and that was taken very seriously by the courts. During 1998, myself and Judge Tipton and others were asked by several counties to explain the program. We made numerous site visits to inform the court and the community of what we were doing, from coordination efforts all the way to service efforts. And at the same time, the National Center for State Courts saw our research, and they were fascinated by what was going on in Oregon. It wasn't happening in any other place. And so they visited Deschutes in Jackson County in September of 98. And the National Center for State Court is the Secretariat for all state courts. They conduct extensive research projects, they promote innovative programs, and they educate judges and administrators. During their site visit, we asked the Center for Assistance to help us determine how to best research if families are better off in the family court system. So the state court administrator and the chief justice brought the National Center back out. They were on their own dime through federal funds. They were real excited about this project. And there are representatives from Deschutes, Jackson, Douglas, Multnomah, and the State Court Administrator's Office gathered for a day to explore how we would go about doing that. Now, the limitations, this is tab three, the limitations with doing this type of study, and like I said, we're just developing a framework now, is the study, this study in family success hinges on the interdependence of separate branches of government. We're all in this together. The courts can't do it by themselves. We need the human service agencies. We need the schools. We need the legislature if we're going to embark on this type of study. Funds aren't available for the research. We might be able to get some funds through the National Center. There's not an integrated justice system, so we can't exchange information and track these families throughout. It's a longitudinal study. It's the first study of its kind ever been conducted that we can find. And also the framework we're talking about here needs further analysis and field testing. So how do you operationalize whether or not families are better off in the court system? And we had four big things that we felt needed to be looked at. More informed decision making results in better quality decisions. And then there's some issues underneath that. We need to make sure cases are bundled, consistent orders, non-conflicting orders, etc. Services are tailored to the strengths and needs of families and participants. We don't want to work from a weakness system. We want to work from a strength-based system. Access to the courts and community service. There's good security. People feel comfortable coming in the courthouse and to these different type of unity meetings. And accountability, strong accountability for whether or not the plans are being followed through, and if not, why not. So it's a study that will require a lot more time, a lot more attention, and some funds to be able to conduct. But we are looking at it, and hopefully in the near future we'll be able to do that, because that is the ultimate question. Are families better off in the system? In conclusion, we need the study. The approach has not yet been decided. We need to work now. We need to roll this out with schools, service providers, and also the legislature. And as I said, hopefully the National Center for State Courts might have some funding to help us out. With that, Mr. Chair, I'm finished.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Mansell. All questions? Thank you, Mr. Chair. You mentioned the return rate from agencies. I wasn't overly impressed with the return that they sent back. I would think that, especially with the State Service to Children and Families, that is our number one provider of services out there, that they would be overly enthusiastic about reporting to you what is happening with children, because that's their job. Could you clarify that a little of the return? I think, what was it? 40% or something like that?
Mr. Chair, Senator Timms, that's correct. It was a 40% return. As I recall, I can get those figures for us. Our lowest return was from the family members themselves. Our higher return was from the agencies. What we did to increase that return, if you look at that report, we did 24 telephone interviews, and we have testimonials in there from like SOSCF, Human Services, et cetera. So that was a way that we went about trying to get a greater return. My understanding, when I say we had lack of sophisticated equipment and tools to be able to do this, is that a 40% return, although not the greatest, is not a real bad return on questionnaires.
Well, I understand on questionnaires, but really it's their job to be doing what you're doing in some cases. And don't get me wrong, I think this program to me looks effective, and bothers me, and I'm trying to put together in my mind that there are evidently, when people get in trouble with the law, it's something that it spreads and it happens throughout their family and the total process, and that's why family courts play. But those same people should be interacting with our other agencies in the process. Where are you currently in your budget in regards to this? Where is it in here? Because it started in 1995. So it has to be, it is in your budget currently.
Mr. Chair, Senator Timms, there are positions for Jackson and Deschutes County that are in the base budget. There's also a policy question as to whether or not you want to
expand it.
Yes, sir.
Yep. Okay, I'm impressed, but I'm, Mr. Chair, I'm just a little nervous about it. Here we are. We got family courts, and we got the Services to Children and Families. We got a governor's program with $30 million for juveniles, and we got, you know, so many things that are out there that, in regards to this, and it's very interesting to me that we, and I wasn't that familiar with family courts, and I think they do provide a function, but I'm wondering how to make it happen with everything else that's out there on this issue.
Oh, relax, Senator. The governor put 100 cops on the road with $1 million. I read it in the newspaper.
He really followed our example.
Pretty good idea.
Yeah. Followed our example.
Center hand.
Ernie, all the family court does is use the heat of facilitator to bring all these services into play.
Previously, the family court person may have been contacted once by Commissioner of Children and Families, once by AFS, once by whoever else in Human Resources. It just allows you the access to bring all those forces together into one arena for coordination of benefits and depending on what help and assistance is available. One of the reasons I find your 40% return is it appears that some of the state agencies are still reluctant to really fully participate. Because 40% return indicates to me that they have their little covered wagons parked in a circle and they don't want anybody to penetrate that. Is that an accurate assumption of some state agencies? You don't have to be specific, but isn't that truly the frustrating part of family court at this point?
Chair Senator Hannon, it was very difficult for us to line the service providers up when we got started. There was quite a bit of apprehension. If you get a chance to read that report, you'll see in there it explains that. We spent a good year and a half to 2 years talking about it, working with community leaders to help us convince the agencies of the need to be able to do this. What we found was that while the agencies were doing the best they could, there were a lot of individual plans out there and none of the services were being wrapped around them. That's what we wanted to do, was to be able to coordinate them.
So what it really boils down to is it only came into play in 95. By the time you got it up and running, 97 this year. Now you've just had a few months of operation in 99 this year. Is that a fair characterization of it?
Sure, Senator Hannon, that's correct. It took some
time. You're asking to continue on something there that really hasn't had an opportunity yet. Because what I'd like to see you do at some point is show what the estimated cost savings to all these other agencies are by the court coordinating these benefits. That's where genuine cost savings comes in. That's where you can show, you know, we're just adopting budgets based upon need. Well, maybe their need would be less if they coordinated the benefits. And this is what would be helpful for us to see.
Chair Senator Hannon, I think that's a very good point.
Further questions for Mr. Nesbitt at this point in time? Would you like a one-word answer to your question?
I feel like you're not Mr. Nesbitt.
No, they did send me from Burns asked where I was at. And where I was from, and I told you that's from Johnny.
Nothing wrong with that.
So, since we're the second pilot project that we've approved for this
plan, it is very good. I can attest to that.
They have been.
Just flat bottom line, they work.
They do. But I'd like to have, at some point, to request somebody to do an analysis on what the actual cost savings is. I'm not sure who that proper body would be. They'd be staff. But.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I was going to tell you, I think it's too early yet.
Yes.
Because these programs are still very much in the pilot phase of working through different methodologies for doing things in different counties. So I think it's going to be probably, and this is very hard for the legislature to deal with, but it's going to be a couple of biennia before you actually have this sort of systematized to the point where you can look across various counties in the state and have a pretty good feel for it. But I think that asking the courts that have these programs up and running to at least evaluate the input from other state agencies is a good thing to do.
Yeah.
And that is precisely what we're asking the National Center for State Courts to help them look at, is how do these programs get coordinated, and then how do you measure the benefit of that coordination. And again, it's going to be very long term because some of these families have small children, and what you're really trying to do is avoid having them in your system as teenagers, so that kind of thing. But I think, you know, expressing on in the budget report, for example, an interest that these folks continue to track the involvement of other state agencies would be useful.
Okay. And I'd like to, I guess the proper word would be critique. Senator Kim's comment is that when crime in the East Van, I mean, they identify one crime and then it spreads. It doesn't do that. Crime's always been there. The family courts have just identified that this is where all the crime is coming from. I mean, a relatively few number of families.
A point I've had a problem with the program in Klamath Falls. Klamath Adolescent Program, which Del Parks worked on, and the courts, I can't get it done through the Commission on Children and Family. I had to go through the courts. Get it done because of the local prejudice against this person. When you look at the court system, it gets more defined than it does in the Commission for Children and Families and those type things. It looks like I'm going to have to try and do it again this session if I can't give you my resources to go along with. So I go through Judge Isaac, Judge Arford, other people that believe in this program. They take care of adolescent girls that nobody else wants to take care of. Title VII and out of the system. And so as I sit here, I think Maybe we do away with the commission and show the families and run everything through the courts and not the commission. It would be the state services.
Stop it.
Because I've seen it not attractive because there were prejudice against this person. And, you know, that's when the system really breaks down, when you run into a local situation where they will not take care of adolescent girls who would be in prison or a juvenile facility if it wasn't for this lady that runs the CAP program. And it's been a very frustrating thing for me to do in this process.
Well, Senator, I'm not so facetiously say, send them to Deschutes County. We got a
full program I'm going to be talking about, but that's a different budget.
Another pilot?
Wow.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair.
Perhaps not. Anyway, any other further questions for Mr. Nasrall? Thank you, Ernie.
Excellent presentation.
You want to call Kingsley quick? Do you want to go through here, Kingsley, and introduce people, or just have some general
buttons?
Oh, really good
luck. Hi, over.
How many days in a row have you been here?
First time I've touched it, looking. I'm so used to with the press. For the record, Kingsley, Cliff Secret Administrator, and I have been here long enough to know better. We're going to talk about, for the remainder of the time, technology in more detail, going through our base budget, current service level, the integrated justice environment, and also some packages that we haven't had discussed before, but just telling you if you want to go one step further where we go. I'm going to go ahead and bring up the folks. The in front of you, you have a two-page, which is what I call the chief one-page budget, and with our exciting little arrows pointing to the three topics for today. And on the second page, though, is the cross-reference from our budget. We pulled out all the numbers and figures, and it goes from our base budget down to what we call the essentials, and then down into further technology. So hopefully it'll be easier to find what we're talking about as we go along. So, Carl, did you want to bring up your panel? Our presentation part is pretty short, so that we hope there'll be plenty of time to really go to where your question is.
Let me just ask Kingsley, Carl, can you guys do this in an hour?
We can make a good run of it.
That will almost try and maybe put us back on schedule. And that we need, because I think we're going to have another long house session tomorrow. And we'll just see. Anyway. Yes. Carl, thank you for cleaning up the mess. Made by our fire witness.
He is our technology expert.
For the record, my name is Carl Ward. I'm the Information Technology Director for the Judicial Department. And I have with me here Jim Adams, who's trial court administrator in Jackson County, who's going to do a piece of this presentation with me. As Kingsley said, we're going to run you quickly through our current service level, because we do have some things in there on our current service level based budget. What we do with it from budget to budget changes somewhat.
Are you working off the blue and call?
Yes, let me point you to the correct hand out there. The first thing I'm going to do is Robin had asked a question about the trial court base appropriation, and so in this blue-covered handout that has this technology on the front of it. The very first page in there is a one-page outline that is just a quick example I'm going to use for the an explanation of these base budget expenditures. I looked out in the trial court appropriation, and I found only two relatively large technology-related numbers out there. One was for technology equipment, $177,000. The other was for data processing hardware and software combined at $899,000. I think we have about a $400,000 appropriation for data processing hardware and software in the trial court appropriation, and the rest of that number comes from vacancy savings. I think on the surface that seems like a lot of money, so I think to sort of understand what happens to that money, I just got a couple of quick sort of do the numbers examples. For the technical equipment, $177,000, what we typically buy out of there are copiers, faxes, sound systems for courtrooms, things like that. So just a quick example is we in OJD have about 50 buildings or 50 locations that we do business in. So if you figure that we have about 100 copiers or two per building, and I put those on a five-year life cycle, I need to buy 40 per biennium to keep those 100 copiers alive and running well. If I do that, then I need to spend $200,000 a biennium on copiers. And you can easily spend $7,000 or $8,000 or $10,000 on a copier. $5,000 is fairly conservative. So those are the kind of numbers that get chewed up. I said 75 courtrooms with sound systems. If you put them on a 15-year life cycle, and I'm a little high on $15,000 per sound system, but if they were $15,000, that'd be $150,000. Per biennium that I would spend on my 5-year, on my 15-year life cycle, I would need 10 per biennium. So with numbers like that, what that means is I have copiers and sound systems for good faxes. I don't like faxes anyway. I'm on a 10-year life cycle for copiers. I'm on a 30-year life cycle for sound systems. And if you go out in the courts today, that's about what you find out there. 10-year-old copiers, 15, 20, 30-year-old copiers. That's about the way it goes. As I was preparing this presentation, my copier that's only 6 or 7 years old refuses to duplex. So that always is exactly the time that you need it. So that's where that kind of money goes. DP hardware and software, that went mostly, I expect, without looking at the details, to desktop replacements, basically terminal replacements, a number that we're talking for in this biennium. What that gets you, off the top of that, we took about $100,000 and we spent it for Lotus Notes licenses, which was our new email system that buys about 1,000 of those licenses, and premise software licenses, which is the CD-ROM-based Westlaw legal research. So looking at about $800,000 of that number, that buys me about 250 personal computers. If I wanted to have the judicial department desktop machines on a five-year life cycle at 2,000 machines that I need to do the job, every 5 years, I'd need to buy 800 each biennium, and I just bought 250 in the last biennium. I probably bought 250 in the biennium before this. So really what I've got are desktops out there that are on about an eight-year life cycle. And so just for fun, I went on the Internet and looked up the history of microprocessors to see what was happening 8 years ago. 8 years ago, the desktop machine of choice was a 25 megahertz 486. I don't know if that means anything to you. You can run any PC software that's available today on one of those machines, but we still run a fair number of those out in trial courts. Additionally, we run a fair number, probably 200 or 300 terminals, which don't run any sort of PC software at all or any sort of modern application. So that's where that money goes to. That's our PC lifecycle replacement plan for the judicial department right now, 8-year lifecycle. It's been inadequate, and that remains that way. So we're hoping to correct that in this biennium.
Okay, proceed.
Then the next page is page 2 and 3. There's a sort of large table that looks like this in your handout. That's my, and I say my, that's ISG's current service level technology budget. And when I say my, that's for 36 trial courts and the 3 appellate courts in Oscar. It's not really mine, even though I like to think of it that way.
Excuse me. Senator Burdick.
Thank you. Go back to the desktop machine. You have 3180 each. That seems awfully high with how prices have come down for desktop computers. Why is it that high?
Mr. Chair, Senator Burdick, that's a good question. Those prices have dropped a little bit, and so I could rerun those numbers, but they haven't dropped much, and I'll tell you why they look sort of high. That's number one, that's the hardware. So it's a new machine and a monitor, keyboard, and all of that stuff. It doesn't cost $3,180. but it's a 5-year life cycle price for that machine. So it's not only the software and network interface card that you buy when you buy the machine, like you need WordPerfect and you need the Lotus Notes license and a few other things, but it's that license 2 or 3 times, because over a 5-year life cycle, those licenses are going to need to be upgraded 2 or 3 times. In other words, the WordPerfect is going to come out again in another couple of years, and those licenses just came out again. So you have to rebuy those over 2 or 3 years. The other thing is included in the price of each one of those machines is 1/5 of a printer. So basically a shared printer between 5 people is built into there. So, you know, is that number $200 too high or $200 too low? It just depends. But that's a pretty good number. I pulled that. We watch the market every 6 months, and it changes every 6 months. This number comes from about January of 99, so it's a little old, but pretty close.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Hand,
Carl, would the purchasing price, if you wrapped it up in what the executive department is buying there, is that a purchase order of a large quantity, would that add additional reduction to the cost of buying some of this equipment?
Mr. Sheriff, Senator Hand, we virtually always buy our desktop machines off the state contract, so we get the state contract price. Now, what will be true if we get this funded so that we're buying 500 or 1,000 machines or something is we will go directly to the vendors on the state price, and they'll give us another reduction even off the state bid price. So we'll get the lowest price possible when we do this. And I would be glad to rerun the numbers for the committee on whatever. I think we're currently buying Dells. I can rerun the numbers on these. It's a fairly straightforward formula. I mean, there's no mystery here. And it'll save a few dollars, but a few dollars out.
A few dollars here and a few dollars there. Pretty soon we're talking real money. I'd
be glad to do it.
Pretty soon we can do another family court system.
Yeah.
I'm okay.
Let's proceed. We're on the first
current
side.
Service level, page 2 and 3. What happens to my base budget is I basically.
Wait a minute, Carl. Let me make sure I know where you're talking. We're talking right here.
No, I'm talking about the blue handout that
okay.
Field that says technology right. In the front. There's a table starting on page 2 that says current service level technology.
Okay.
My non-personal services based budget since 1985 has been $5.5 to $6 million. It's actually since the early 90s, it's been a little bit less than $5 million, but that's the ballpark that we're talking in. It sort of flip-flops in what I do with it every other biennium. This biennium, for example, we upgraded all of our AS400 database servers, basically our big computers that run the OGIN application. And we have those on about 4.5 or 5 year life cycle. So every other biennium, we spend almost every nickel we have, other than keeping the lights on and the water running, upgrading those servers. In the off bienniums, which this budget is, we spend all of the base budget money that we have and can find upgrading the rest of our infrastructure. So what you see us doing with those dollars are sort of things like are in this list. And I thought I would just run down this list and point out a couple of the bigger numbers that might not obviously be maintenance sorts of upgrades. And then I'll just take any sort of questions that you want on this base budget. And we'll move on to the new stuff.
Before you, Carl, this list he's talking about is the first line item on that other sheet, which is the $9.277 million. Carl's running through what's in base now.
Okay.
The first big number in there is the first item, and it's the only one that's not really categorized with a big description. It's actually $4.8 million, but 3.2 of that are my 22.48 staff. The $1.6 million in the next biennium, about $850,000 of that will go basically through DAS to US West for the frame relay network. The other $750,000 remainder is basically my SNS budget for the 2 years, and that goes for all of the sort of pens and pencil things, but it goes for all of the other sort of non-scheduled maintenance activities that I have to do. Like I have air conditioners in 18 computer rooms. Two or three of those compressors will burn out. I'll spend $10,000 each for a new air conditioner. All sorts of hubs and routers and switches out there that are past their life cycle, but we're still running them. When they break, we'll actually have to replace them. So we have a certain amount of computer hardware that we have to go out and buy each year. The other big item in there that's sort of a change from last time, the next item down is $1,000,001 for information technology maintenance contracts. For years, that number has hovered around $700,000 in my budget, and that's just AS400 maintenance and maintenance on all the other hardware and software pieces that we have. It jumped up about $350,000 or $60,000 this biennium. That came out of a line item that used to be just data processing software in my budget, and it just reflects a change in the way that IBM licenses the software. We now have to put the license for that software in a contract. So it just moved out of a purchase item into a contract item. And so that number corresponds
to those numbers.
Two questions. One, I didn't understand the early reference to U.S. West and leaving that $1,000,006 down quite over the U.S. West contract. Secondly, how does, you're referring to the information technology maintenance contract, something you've done, but it's now increased, but it's not in the current service level. So I'm not clear on what, how to differentiate the current service level from all these new additions. Are these really new additions?
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, this is all in current service level.
It's just reorganizing.
And it's just reorganized on what we're actually spending it for this biennium from last biennium. I basically rebuild my current service level from zero every biennium.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, just to clarify, what he's walking through right now are the resources that they currently have in their base budget. And then he will move on to his new request.
So these are, just a clarification, sir, is these things add up to 4.893, 854.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, sorry.
That's okay. Mr. Chair, members of the committee, they add up to the 9.27 that you see on the bottom of page 3.
And then last question, so what is the general current service level, item number 1, 4.893854?
That's 3.2 million of that are personal services for staff, 22.48 staff. 1.6 million of that is non-specific S&S. In other words, I have that in travel, training, pens, pencils, things like that. But actually, 850,000 of that are my frame relay network costs. That
of the
1.6 US West, of the 1.6.
At the administration of the network.
That's just the like paying your phone bill. That's just the cost of the lines.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I think the closest analogy is just sort of these are the, that first line is the central office sort of operating piece, and then the detailed other areas are outlined below.
That's your monthly service fee.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
Pretty good job.
Right. And actually, that's going to end up being fairly short this biennium, but depending on how fast the state enterprise network is able to roll out or not. The other big numbers towards the middle of the page, network capacity maintenance, that's upgrading some of my slower circuits up to a faster speed that they need to be at to actually run current applications. Further down the page, where we have 37 fairly old, 6 or 7 or 8 year old matrix check printers. We've just got a check printer package that has sort of bumped its way up in priority. We run a very old help desk that we wrote in house about 12 or 13 years ago before help desks were a thing that you could actually go out and buy off the shelf. That needs to be replaced. It needs to be a help desk that the people who support our technology out in Crawford can also access. So that's what that is.
So you're not just replacing 37 printers. There's more in there.
Actually, we are not just replacing 37 printers at about $5,000 per printer. What we're doing is, This comes from a bid that we got about 18 months ago to actually come in and replace those matrix check printers where you put the 10-feed checks in and burn a few checks and then print and turn them off with laser check printers and the software to take our current check writing program and make it print the laser check out of the laser check printer machine. So it's actually an upgrade as well as a life cycle replacement in the way we print checks.
Well, it's kind of expensive. I mean, very expensive. There's no cheaper application that'll do the job.
Well, we are running, it's sort of a pay me now or pay me later situation, Representative Schrader. We run the matrix check printers now. It's fairly labor intensive for each of the 36 courts to print those checks out. We could continue doing that in that way for a lower hardware printer cost. On the other hand, we felt, and the trial courts made the argument to us, that they spent a lot of time fussing around trying to get those checks printed out in a timely fashion. You have to line the numbers on the checks up with the number in the program. You get those misaligned, you're burning a batch of checks, and you have to start over. And so we believe that this is actually cost-effective in terms of producing the checks in terms if you include the labor of the person that's actually having the accounting labor to produce the checks.
Not to blare fly, I've never found technology to live up to one's expectations, however, and if you can show me that you're going to use less people, that sounds good, and I would assume that's going to free some court people up, so that's going to make it so we're not spending as much money on additional court staff, then, is what you're telling me.
Representative Westland, Representative Schrader, that's true, and I think a good way to know whether technology is working for you is to look to the past and see what you can do now that you couldn't do then. It's much harder to project out towards the future because things change in very subtle ways. But if you look to the past at what you couldn't do in the courts 10 years ago and what you can do now, you couldn't do half of what we do now with the staff that we have now, which is basically the same staff we had 10 years ago as we do. And a big part of that difference is technology. We couldn't balance our trust and revenue accounts, for example. Couldn't be done. Is that important? Does it save you money to be able to do that? Absolutely. So, you know, that's a different perspective, a different way to look at that. But, on page 3 now, the only other big items in my base budget are I have an enterprise network management package in there that's $0.56 million. That's sort of misnamed. It really has mostly to do with the hardware and mostly software to give us the capability to manage desktop machines. In other words, our old computing model was we had dumb terminals out there, and you virtually never had to touch them. The new machines have to have software loaded on them, and they require some maintenance to keep them running. They have different security needs. Right now, the way we do that is we have 4 people in the trial courts in only 17 courts, and then the rest of the courts have no technology people out there. And somehow, mostly by shipping disks around and running around, and I actually send people out to Eastern Oregon as often as I can, people have to go around and touch each of those machines. That's very costly and takes a lot of time and actually prevents us from doing a lot of things that we need to do in a sort of timely way. If your machine breaks, I have to get somebody out there often to be able to fix that machine. This is the solution to that problem. So once again, on the surface, seems like a lot of money. I think it really saves us money in terms of operations and technology staff that we need in the long run.
Thanks, Chairman.
Carl, how much of the cost of buying and maintaining equipment comes from the actual county versus the court? Is the court paying 100% of everything?
Senator Hand, you mean the county government or the court in the county? The state
We've been asked to take over more and more funding of the courts, including those employees that are treated as county employees working for the state court. But we provide all this equipment for the state court system.
Senator Hand, that's correct.
All that comes out of state court.
True.
What is the only thing that doesn't come out as far as employee segregation that is not funded by the state? Just the employees in the courthouse?
Senator Hand, I'll take a run at that. It seems like you can correct me. basically on the technology front, where we draw the line is, I believe, at sort of the wire in the wall, and whether it's for the for technology or for your sort of utilities, which includes the phone system. So in other words, the counties install the phone wires in the wall and the electrical wires and the water, but we install the data circuit wires even in the walls in the courthouses and all of the technology equipment. They supply the space, they supply the power.
So basically, and I'm trying to find out how much more courts were, or the county government take, want us to take over. But most of it is in personnel costs.
Chair Westman, Senator Hannon, we do pay for all of our court staff. There are certain county functions that have been suggested the state take over, but as far as all the court staff and the judges, those are all paid with state dollars. As Carl mentioned, all the technology, wiring, and equipment, it's the actual courthouse facilities space, the external space, and the room parameters that the county provides, as well as the utilities.
Well, getting back to technology, do some of these older buildings have the capability of ramping up to this type of technology, or is this something that's going to be an additional expense down the road where you convert an older use facility to modern day technology?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, last biennium, I believe, we spent a big chunk of our base budget rewiring all of the courthouses. So in terms of actually being able to install these desktops on the desks now and connect them up, we're ready to go. And that was a big expense. I think we spent $1.4 million to rewire all the courthouses in the state. Now we just need something to hook them up to.
Is any of that carried forward in this budget?
Senator Hannon, no, not really, other than normal maintenance level. I have a building and structural repair account in there that's usually about $80,000 or $90,000, and I probably spend another $50,000 or $60,000 on things like the counties will sometimes move parts of the court around, or they'll move the courtroom, and sometimes if it's their idea, we negotiate with them and they pay for it, and sometimes if it's our idea, they're giving us new space, we pay for it.
Okay.
So there's a maintenance level, but the wire that we installed was certified 200 megabits, so it's
state-of-the-art infrastructure right now. Thank you.
95.97. Okay. Good question, Senator. Last item in current service level, and I'll move on. We have 830,000, the last item on page 3, for terminal replacement. It's basically a part of the entire number that we need for our terminal replacement package, and that's to put a desktop on, an adequate desktop on all of our workers' desks. We are really basically an information processing business, the trial courts, and really our work product is information. On public access counters, on judges' bench and judges' chambers, on the clerk's workstation in the courtroom, on the clerk's workstation out of the courtroom if they have one. So we need about 2,000 workstations to do that. We've got about 830,000 in base.
Representative Schrader.
Yeah, but you got another $3 million in the extra packages. That's going to be just for a workstation. It may get a little expensive if we do this all this biennium.
Representative Schrader, we actually asked for, as I said, a five-year life cycle for these machines is 800 machines. I really, if I had them in my base and I had them on a five-year life cycle, I'd need $2 million of biennium to do it. It's $4 million now because we asked for this package last biennium, we didn't get it. We asked for the biennium before last, we didn't get it. We're basically funded in our base at about $700 per workstation, which is the terminal model, because our budget hasn't changed since the late 80s. So if I were still buying terminals at $700 a pop, we'd be current on our hardware on the desktop. The problem is those terminals became obsolete and the replacement cost $3,000, and we've never been able to get that change made to our base budget.
Just a follow-up. So you have $700 per terminal in your base budget.
Well, $830,000 I've carved out this time. However, that figures out.
That's your part of the base budget.
Like I say, it sort of flops back and forth each and every biennium, but you know, at $700 per terminal, I can make that work. Additionally, if you go back 10 years, I probably only had about 1,100 terminals out there in the trial courts. I really didn't have. We didn't put terminals on judges' desks or in the courtroom. There wasn't really anything there for them to deal with it. Now, legal research, internet access, they can access our new applications, and they mean something and do something for them, like the influence training judgment. Whereas in the past, not so much, not so exciting.
On the enterprise network stuff, I mean, some of that will be helping the judicial department, but from the narrative, it would appear that a lot of this would help our users accessing the system besides just the judicial department, or am I misreading that? For all the users you're referring to, just the courts.
Let me just see what I said in there. Which one are you talking about?
The enterprise help desk and network management. Network management is 250 clients. Halfway up page 3.
Enterprise network management, Representative Schrader, enterprise network management is, that's really for the desktops of the employees of the judicial department. If I said something in there I didn't intend, that would be something for people outside of the department. On the enterprise help desk, the enterprise help desk, of course, is used by all of the couple of thousand state agency users who access OGIN. If they have a problem, they call my help desk, and the same with the public users. They also use the help desk. So to a great extent, that is both supporting the judicial department and all the other users of the OGIN.
And the reason I raise this is that also in your next portion of your budget, there's more enterprise help stuff. And it seems strange to me. Here we pay software network administrators, and shouldn't they be paying you guys if you have this in your budget and you're helping them? In other words, shouldn't we get to my favorite topic, recovering some of the costs a little bit here? Because I've seen other health board budgets where we end up having to pay big bucks for network administrators. Well, in effect, you're becoming the network administrator for a lot of these outside outfits. So I think we should make sure that we charge them just as much as we charge each little health board and agency to recover some of the same costs. So it all shouldn't come out of this budget.
Representative Schrader, you're absolutely right. On the public access side, where they do pay for services, although we can have a debate as to whether they pay enough or not, they do pay, and the intention is that they pay for that service. On the state agency side, of course, they're not paying, so you have about the same size work and support effort, but there is no money coming in to cover that, and that's how the issue arose. It ended up being about 10% of my budget, and so...
more data services to state agencies.
Correct.
Well, Carl, like gas breaks out a service fee for all state agencies. Included in that is nothing for judicial. Say I'm with Mission for Children and Families, and I have two of my clients in your court system, and I want to access some of the information. Currently, as I understood you just explained, you don't charge for that service. The Commission for Children and Families has that information. But when we deal with agencies, we deal with Department of Administrative Services assessment costs. In there, it's not included for court services.
Mr. Weston, Senator Hannon, correct. We pay DOSS an assessment as part of our state assessment. but there is no...
But only as a state agency, right. There's no line item for
there's no return or there's no judicial assessment. That is one of the items when we get to the partnerships that we put state agencies on notice depending on how our budget hearing so that we would may have to charge them an upcoming biennium to recover that particular asset.
And we have a whole section to sort of go through that and
answer
that question.
It's an irony that in the system that doesn't
work. Well, it kind of makes you wonder why it hasn't been included previously because it's, in fact, a cost shift. You're eating the cost within your own budget, so.
Okay. Senator Hancock, I will we'll sort of fill you in on that and the county's
okay.
Mainly the county's reaction to that.
The department, Mr. Chairman of the committee, the department did try to impose some access fees, and we have to strenuous objections from state agencies who were not budgeted at the time for those fees, and I believe that issue is still in negotiation with the state agencies, and they will talk about that.
A little behavioral modification version.
And as Representative Schrader was pointing out, I mean, up here privately at the dais, I mean, can there be any way that some of these dollars expended by the state agencies could be federal or other funds as opposed to just straight general fund dollars?
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure what the answer to that is, except I don't see why they couldn't be.
Yeah,
I think exactly the real resistance was from the counties more than the state, since the state's more sort of in the same budget situation they are. I think, however, it gets solved for those guys, they're okay with it. They pay, they don't pay, you pay us, it doesn't matter to them. The county agencies haven't had a much well, I'm not sure I would make a distinction.
Make a distinction?
I mean, I think we were speaking with representatives of the county government. So.
Right, that has never been raised before.
I will, let's move on to what in the Chief Justice's budget was identified as potential packages. And we have referred to it as the integrated justice environment. I will speak, I hope, for about 15 minutes from this one page, $15 million one page. Really what we are asking for in the integrated justice environment is the infrastructure and the resources to perform a modernization of the Oregon Judicial Information Network. As we've said, it's 15 years old, 14 years old. It really is time to reinvest in that. I will just quickly explain what each of these different components are, and then we will talk about some of the statewide and community benefits, and then we'll stop and give you guys a chance to ask questions about the stuff. In the top box, the modernization of the Oregon Judicial Information Network, on the bottom arrow, which identifies those packages at the bottom as infrastructure support, those really are some base remainder needs and base sort of infrastructure items that we need to modernize the court system. The most expensive, of course, is green screen terminal replacement, which we're about biennium behind on. 7x24 service is simply being able to keep the doors of our computer system open a longer amount of time. For the Judicial Department, it helps us because if one of those machines goes down overnight or over a weekend, we don't have anybody in until about 7 o'clock in the morning to bring it up. And if it takes 2 or 3 hours to come up, then the court can be down or behind. 7 hours is real time, but they may not have financial reports or calendar reports that they need to do their work during the day. We've also frequently had this service requested from other agencies that access the system, especially law enforcement and human resource sorts of agencies would love to be able to get into these machines after hours or on weekends when the courts are normally not open.
Sir Hannon.
What local law enforcement would not have access to this information?
Mr. Chair, Senator Hannon, if I understand your question, they really all have access to it now. The problem arises when everybody goes home at 6 or 7 o'clock, which they have on a daily basis for my shop. If one of these machines fails, then it's down until the next day, until somebody comes back in to bring it back up. In other words, we don't have any after-hours or off-shift staff.
So are you going to propose a person to be a maintenance or an operator or someone on duty during that cleaning service?
Senator Hand, that's exactly right. This package is nothing other than three system operator types who will be in here on graveyard and swing shift. Now, this really doesn't, three more people doesn't really get me to 7 by 24, but it gets me pretty close. I can keep the machines up pretty close to 7 by 24 with three more people.
So a policeman doing a traffic stop out in Eastern Oregon would have access to call in to his or her headquarters, and they could type in the information and get it back out of the judicial system.
Senator Hannon, that's exactly right. Wherever they can get to a terminal, they can access the system, as they can now unless it's down. The other thing that we'll be able to do is we'll be able to answer the telephone if somebody's having a problem. The system may be up and you may be having some other sort of network problem or something like that, and there's nobody at the other end of the telephone. So it sort of works two ways.
A little bit the same issue on this 24-hour operations. I mean, you have some people already doing it during the day. So you only really need additional people at night. So I'm not sure you need three people. So there's one person, you know, to do that during the evening shift. Maybe two if you have two shifts through the evening. And I would assume you're going to have the Department of Revenue or the state police pay for this, not you guys, you don't think.
Representative Schrader, I don't know that I can really respond to state police pay for it, but to run a swing shift, you need one person. To run a graveyard, you need one person. Then you need another person to run the weekend. Is sort of one way to look at it. You really have to sort of make those shifts work in a different way, but you've got the weekend coverage, and you can't have the people sort of during the week doing that as well. So that takes you to three people right there. What you really probably need is five people to really be able to do 7 by 24. Network management is really the other half of the same package that we had in base. The part that we had in base was to sort of get us started, manage all of our servers, license us to manage about 250 desktops. This takes us to the rest of the desktops in the system. Lotus Notes support is two staff people that we currently have borrowed from other duties to run our installation of our new electronic mail system. I have one Lotus Notes administrator who sort of does all of the techie things behind the scenes to keep that running. He's a limited duration person. And then I have taken a project manager, notes developer, and created that out of training system implementation staff. And so while that person is doing the Lotus Notes work now, as she is, she's not out in the call court installing the new calendaring system or helping people learn to use the new in-portable proceeding system. So it's basically just a resource issue to keep Lotus Notes up and running. Enterprise Help Desk, that's three more people, and that's just a workload impact on our help desk. I have the same four help desk staff today manning my help desk with 6,000 end users that I had in 1989 with 11 or 1,200 end users. And as anyone in the judicial department and probably a lot of our customers will tell you, it's very frustrating to not have somebody from our help desk call you back for a couple, 3 days because you didn't have a top priority problem and we just couldn't get it worked up in the priority scheme of things with the resources that we had. Moving up to the arrow that says modernize, this is really rewriting the OGIN application, re-engineering it to match the work processes of the courts, giving the courts the tools they need to re-engineer their business. If you break that package down, it's mostly a staff package, about 60% for development, deployment, maintenance staff in Salem, about 20% for additional technical and business re-engineering and business analyst staff in the trial courts. We have 20% of that, of this entire package, is the Greenstone package. We'll talk more about exactly what the integrated justice environment and rewriting that application will mean in the statewide benefits and the community benefits package, because that's really sort of what you get out of all of this. So I will just, I'll move past that right now.
Thanks, Quickie. You mentioned green screen, so there's more green screen wrapped into that budget?
Yeah, I was sort of going there, but that was incorrect. I was thinking of the pie chart on the next page where I had sort of put all of this in one big budget picture, and it was off on the wrong track. Since everybody's looking at that, that's sort of a different view of this entire integrated justice package, and my point in doing that was to show you that if you take the technology staff part, the court staff part, and the green screens, you're really spending all of your dollars on to some extent, maintenance-level catch-up for the last 10 years. Although we're proposing to do a lot of new and interesting and beneficial things with this, it wouldn't be nearly so big if we'd been doing one-tenth of it in each of the last 10 years. I guess. Nothing sort of... We're not buying some new big computer or anything like that. There's nothing sort of mysterious in there.
Would this be a limited expenditure to go away next time? I mean, in an ideal world, if they were able to do this, you said basically rewriting OGEN, and I know you got like 60% of it, you said, is staff. So I'm sure they'd all go away as soon as most all of them would go away.
Representative Schrader, what we're really saying here is this is an adequate level of staff to maintain operations from now on in the future, although we have identified in this $15 million package $3 million of one-time costs. So there are one-time costs. I would say that none of the staff in here are really one-time costs. They all really need to be rolled up.
Just a moment, sir.
We'll wait until you've done fixing my legs.
Okay.
Are you doing shoes on?
Country boy. I'm just getting a little nervous that, you know, to upgrade the technology system, well, this is a fairly ambitious situation, but we're, you know, most of the technology cost that's going to hopefully make things run smoother and have us need less staff is 60% staff. It's going to be staying with it forever. And I'm kind of, I guess I'd have to see where we're saving in your long-range judicial plan at 60% to make sure this is a good idea.
Mr. Chair, Representative Schrader, let me give you a couple of perspectives on that maybe. One, I'll go back to the one I said before. If you look back 10 or 15 years ago and say what am I able to do now with basically the same staff I have now that I couldn't do 15 years ago, there have been some very big positive changes over the years. If you project that out to the future, I think what we're saying here is you'll get the same result. The other thing is I know this is a lot of money and it's a lot of staff. It's a big chunk of staff. If it was happening incrementally in a sort of inflation way over the years, it wouldn't be such a big chunk, but it is. In Don Mattiotti referred to a Gartner Group study, a January 99 Gartner Group study a couple of weeks ago when we were in here for integration. They basically survey the industry for technology staff to enterprise staff ratios. And for state agencies, national survey, they probably check everybody. For us to have the average number of staff in the judicial department for state agencies based on our number of employees, we'd need 110 technology staff workers. To be at the median level, we'd need 101. So this would, and I'm not saying we have to be average or we have to be ahead of average, but if you actually gave us all of this staff, you know, we would be approaching average for state agencies.
That's a good comment.
But my point is that we are far behind the curve on where we need to be for technology support. The other thing that happens, of course, is you implement technology is you do transfer a certain amount of work to technology staff in that. So you do see technology staff growing, I think, naturally. And you've seen it even within base in the trial courts. They have carved out technical support positions over the years as they have needed to do more technology things and less court sorts of things. And I would be glad to come back with an extensive study on the results of this, showing you where we have saved money.
Mr. Chairman, Carl, does it necessarily mean that you reduce some of those technology staff at the state level and move them out into the disbursements in the county level where the courts actually are using this technology now?
Senator Hannon, that is not what I meant to say. I have 22 FTE. I've got 4.5 FTE in my enterprise fund, and I usually run 2 or 3 limited durations or 10. So I usually actually have in my building centrally here in Salem about 30 staff. I've had exactly the same number of staff. I've had 29 or 30 staff through limited durations and temps or one way or another since 1984.
But you need that just to maintain the information.
I need 3 times that much just to maintain
the information. Okay. The other point I would make is that we used to go on tours. Subcommittees used to go on tours, and if you've ever been over to the Justice Department, you go downstairs in the basement and see Mr. Ward's function, you'll see that the large size computers have all been diminished. And they're actually in some operational space now that is about 1/3 of what the original operating space was when they computerized. So my difficulty in working with the justice or the judicial branch is not that they're overburdened with staff. They've probably got by with less right here in Salem. But the information that is constantly demanded that they provide, and you have to have the staff to back that up with.
Senator Hannon, if I may just comment on that. One of the things that's happened over the years, as I said, is as trial courts have needed more technical staff and been unable to get those in the budget cycle, they have carved those positions out of clerk's offices. And those staff are more expensive, so you have to carve up a couple of clerks to get one. The other thing is if you look at the pie chart again, in this integrated justice environment package, that's $7.8 million, actually $2.7 million of that are trial court staff. So one of the conversations that we had when we were putting this together with trial court administrators was that one of the things they would need, if we were developing technology and rolling out sort of new functionality on a continuous basis, they wouldn't be able to absorb that into their trial court. Because to absorb that new technology, you really have to change the way that you're doing business, and you need business analysts, system analyst types in there, and maybe some additional level of technical support to train the judge, to see how things used to work in the courtroom and say, well, now we're going to change it and it's going to work this way. And see, you know, you have to have people to take those projects and take a lead and actually make those changes happen. So recognizing this, a big chunk of the staff in here is actually trial court staff. And having said that, I will just mention that on the top arrow, the integrated partnerships part of this, those are 3 additional, really specifically integration-related additional packages that, in the case of CGIS data interchange, would be a continuation of the pilot project work we started. We currently exchange about 500,000 transactions a month now. Fully implemented, that'd be about 3.5 to 4 million transactions a month with other CGIS agencies. The data warehouse is both a part for us of the state CGIS data warehouse and also a policy decision making and program management function both for the judicial department and for the legislature. We had indirectly Senator Bryant ask for how much juvenile restitution is ordered, and we were able to answer that over a couple of days. Actually, we had the date almost instantly, but it took us a couple of days to figure out how to ask the right question. And because we have our pilot data warehouse up and running, and we happen to have the data that would answer that question in the warehouse, a year ago, it would have taken us a couple of weeks and a programmer's time to answer that question. 3 years ago, we couldn't have answered that question at all. So that's the kind of improvement that you can make with that sort of technology. The expanded video conferencing is the Judge Loughlin model, and we would like to roll that out to additional courtrooms. Judge Loughlin is able to sit in his courtroom in Hardin, Malheur County. They have a link to Snake River. They have another link to the Dome Building, and so a deputy attorney general sits in the Dome Building. A defendant and his lawyer who is having a post-conviction relief hearing sits at Snake River, and Judge Robinson sits in his courtroom, and they have a hearing, and the Department of Corrections doesn't have to transport that prisoner to Malheur, and the attorney general doesn't have to probably fly somebody to Boise and drive them back to do that. So that's just an incremental. We'd like to put that in another 10 courtrooms is what that package is.
Carl, let me interrupt you. Jim Adams, the trucker administrator from Jackson County, has been attending very patiently in the city at the witness stand. And I don't know what your travel schedule is. You have to get out of here tomorrow or whatever. So if you want to say a few words.
Mr. Chair, committee members, I will be here tomorrow, so I think these are important dialogues that should occur, and I'll just yield to the chair of the committee's direction. Thank you,
Mr. Chairman. Representative Mannix.
One thing about all of this development of, I'll call them systems and integrating them, I haven't looked for this, perhaps you can help me. Have we got somewhere in here a certain plane that we're aiming at it, and that I would return maybe 4 years from now, where we are going to pull all of our systems up to this plane and integrate them so that they have certain defined capability. Now, we realize that 4 years from now, by the time we reach that date, we will identify a variety of new capabilities and technology. But to some extent, you almost have to say, I'm going to keep moving. I've identified what I want to do, and I'm not going to be thrown off course by the latest gadget or gizmo or concept, that we've got to reach some established level of capability, and then, of course, you can take a breath and you look around at what else can you do, and you start talking about the plans to build up. But it seems to me we're actually rebuilding things as old as 15 years in the system right now, which is important, 9-year-old check printing machines and the like. Is that the idea here, though, that we're trying to pull all these grants together to a level of coherence and capability? Or are we just kind of shooting off and seeing how they're going to link up?
Representative Westland, Representative Mannix, we think we're organized. You know what we're doing is sort of the bottom line. Specifically, the OGIN application is old, and that's an application that really needs to be re-engineered and rebuilt. Most of this other stuff is fairly current technology that we really just need the resources to be able to make it happen. Are we 4 or 5 years away? I think, depending on funding, this is much of what we would like to realize is certainly doable within 4 or 5 years, given the resources. And the resources are in this package right here. Things like rebuilding OGIN and rebuilding it so that it can send and receive and make available electronic court documents. While you're rebuilding an old system, you're giving it very much a sort of current state-of-the-art internet capability. So there's no sort of one straight answer to what you ask. There's a lot of different answers.
Something like, building a highway while you're still using it. I mean, it takes extra time and resources to keep the traffic moving while you're adding these new lanes or whatever else.
Representative Nash, that's very true. On the CGIS EDI project, for example, we started out with this pilot with the idea, we had a contractor come in quite a few years ago and do a big study and tell us how to do this. They sort of engineered it out, mapped it all out, drew it all out. We implemented that in the pilot, and by the time we had it implemented, realized that, number one, it was too expensive. Counties and cities were not going to go for it. They just weren't going to put out that much money, even though we tried to do it in a low-cost way. Plus, really, the technology that you would want to use to solve this problem had really pretty clearly changed into a different direction. So we do have to maintain those people we've already set up in the pilot. We've sort of gone to a middle ground way of doing this as we make this transaction with 3 or 4 counties that we're still working with. as we transition to this new technology, we're also going to have to go back and be sure that these guys that we were working with before are sort of held harmless for the fact that, number one, as a big state agency, it takes us years to get this done, and number two, as you say, the technology changes every 6 months. Before you can finish something, you need to do it a different way. That's just sort of the technology world.
So. Chair Leslie Ripson mentioned, just to follow up, where we're trying to get this biennium is just to let everyone in the court use what we have available now, the programs that have been developed, just first to be able to use what we have now to create better efficiencies and economies. And then the second step is certainly to project out and build around the web-based kind of transaction of the future. But if we could just even accomplish, and this is something, it isn't $15 million that just happened to this biennium. And we had a $7.8 million package last time that didn't get funded, and there was a package before. So it's a cumulative problem. It was a problem and serious, and now we're saying it's critical. If people are going off in other directions, things are starting, you know, the data integrity that you have now is going to be lost, and so it's much more of a crisis issue.
Thank you.
Carl, are you in a good place to start for today?
I am.
And what we'll try to do is sum this up tomorrow. I don't want to pull you away, but I want to give you the opportunity to complete it. Thank you, Mr. Chair. Related to it, and I turned out of the room, so I may have lost the continuity in this pre-cup call unless you're sitting here every minute. But you were talking about a hot site type where you'd send it into an area and then get the information back 24 hours a day. Is that correct? Where it would be stored and you could access that information anytime you wanted it?
Senator Kim, that's not exactly what I was saying. Speaking to the 7x24-hour support. The way OGN is right now, physically, is we have 20 computer rooms and 20 computers around the states in the bigger counties. And if there's no problem, those run pretty much 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. But if there's a problem, they stop running and there's no one there to get them started again. What I'm saying is we sort of have the tools and capabilities now that just having one person available somewhere, wouldn't actually have to be in Salem, but somewhere, so that they can watch those machines and be sure that they're up and running and that all the jobs are running and completing, we could make sure that if there's a problem, those machines are up and running. So it's not that you have to have the data somewhere else or anything. It's just that you have to keep the whole thing up and running. And then anybody who's normally accessing OGN, however they do it, they're either coming through the state network or they dial in or however they do it, then the system is available.
And that's a mainframe or?
In sort of the old terminology, Senator Kim, you would call these mini computers. Today you would call them database servers. They're actually very large database file server sorts of machines. They're smaller. If you think of the DAS mainframe, they're considerably smaller. If you think of a PC, they're considerably larger than that.
I know the state's looking at a hot site possibility down the road, joint venture type thing, and that would be where you go in and out, which we don't have that. We can't do with the Oregon Health Sciences University, for instance, because they're a 24-hour-a-day type situation. It seems to me that you have the same problem with the...
Senator Kim, that would be a solution to us for a slightly different problem, and that is, how do you keep your system up when your system has actually failed? That's what they're really saying there. You've had a failure and your system's going to be down for 2 or 3 hours or a day. What do? They have a hot site backup. We don't have that now. We would be, if they put a hot site backup in Burns, that would certainly make sense for us. But that's a solution to a slightly different problem, and that's how you provide absolutely uninterrupted service. And with 7x24, we're not going to be absolutely uninterrupted. If we have a failure, it's going to be down until we get it back up. I'm just saying, if I have a staff person on site at all times, I can get it up usually within 15 minutes or a half hour.
Is this chart here relates to the advantages of the system, right?
This is one of our favorite charts.
Is it really? How did I miss that? Did you go through this?
Not really.
Okay.
No, we didn't.
It relates to the use, right, of the system with the, basically the same number of FTEs from 2240, from 2089-91 to 22.48 and 97-99, and these are the uses that's been used for in that process.
Senator Sims, that's exactly right. This is really a fairly old chart. It's not entirely accurate, but it's pretty close. And my attempt here was to show you that with the text within the bars, the growing number of applications and major sort of functions that we support, with the line that has the numbers in it, 4,000 to 5,000 to 6,000 to 8,000, the number of users, as the number of users was growing, and then at the top of the bars, the number of support staff that we've had, even though it goes from 20 to 19.95 to 22.48, as I said, really with limited duration and different appropriations, I've really run pretty much 30 straight across, almost always from the start, but 30 has been just as inadequate, really, as 22 in terms of now that we're 15 years down the road. Let me qualify that. When we started, that was good staff. And so when the legislature came to me, for example, in the early 90s or the late 80s and said, hey, we'd like to have unitary assessment and we'd like to completely change board accounting in a new and bizarre way, we were able to do that with no critical impact because basically we had the staff to maintain and change our applications. Now this legislature comes to me and says, gee, I'd like to charge interest on fines. Well, that's a great idea. I've got a $400,000 fiscal impact on it because, number one, my application is old and complex and taxed, and it's going to be tough to change. It's written in COBOL. It's going to be really hard to find COBOL programmers that are willing to work in COBOL. And I just don't have the staff to do it. So I have to look to contractors to come in and make that kind of change. Whereas, you know, 10 years ago, CAD staff cost you nothing to make that sort of big, really sort of major policy change. So I've had the same level of staff from the start. It used to be enough staff, you know, but things have changed. They've gotten more complex. I have a lot more users. I have a lot more applications. Also, if you had a budget line on here, it would actually go down from left to right since 1991.
Now, Mr. Chair, you know, it's interesting to me because I've never seen anything like this before, which shows the usage and what the technology has done for you in relation to the employees, the FTE, and you're also saying in regards to the budget.
Senator Timms, let me also point out one thing that's incorrect on this chart, and it's actually sort of a sad reality. And like I said, this chart's probably 4 or 5 years old. We have about 6,500 users of our system right now. So we were projecting last biennium to be 8,700, but we've actually had a moratorium on hooking up new users because we just haven't been able to support them. So I've got a backlog list of about, you know, 35 city, state, and county agencies that'd like to have anywhere from a couple to 100 users each added on. We probably would be at these numbers if I had the staff to support them, but actually that number of user lines starts to fall off because I just haven't been able to add users to this.
Still increase, but it is slower.
Still increase, but we've had to pull the plug on a lot of people.
Oh, get us the funding line.
I just happened to have it. If you'd like to actually see it.
Yeah, that's
in the other blue.
The technology partnership?
Yeah. On page 5.
No, I don't want something like that. What's that? What?
That's it.
I can't correct just enough. I'm going to say it one more time. I mean one more time. I want stuff that shows your efficiency, what you're doing with less. That is a dramatic chart. And this is what you're telling me you want us to help make your budget decisions on. It's something like that.
That was actually just my representative chart of the fact that, yes, budget line was going down, users were going up, technological complexity is going up. Everything's going up except budget and staff.
Yeah, but Mr. Chair, we must be doing a good job. We're doing more all the time.
Well, I think in some ways you can say, yeah, I mean, we're doing a lot more with what we have.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's typical of us.
Okay. We've all got meetings. I appreciate those who understand that. Any other questions? We're going to give you 10 minutes. I don't care when we start. We're giving you 10 minutes tomorrow. It's the revolving start time.
Mr. Chair, I think the committee would be very interested in having that revenue discussion, the issue of who if you're charging fees to or who you had intended to charge fees to and what the issues are.
Yeah. And can I just put in a couple of handouts if you want to look at them in here? In this technology partnership package, the next to the last page are third-party provider costs that we found, and then the last page that's sort of just with it, we went out and surveyed other states what they're charging. So, that's sort of the information we've gathered on that issue.
Which is that?
The technology partnership. The next to the last page the third-party providers.
Page eight.
Those are the people we sell a big chunk of Ocean database to, and they then sell it. That's what they charge.
And Carl, you're defining users as like the county sheriff's department, a DMV. That would be one.
Individuals.
Is it people or is it terminals?
It's user profiles.
User profiles.
So it's really an individual. They may be sharing a terminal.
Okay.
Or have three.
If you put the crossbar on here with actual dollars, this would be one of the most powerful charts I've ever seen related to anything.
Yeah, you're right. Did I notice that?
I've already got three accesses here. I'll have to think about that.
There's plenty of dollars on this thing. And I appreciate your forthrightness saying, well, wait a minute, this is if we project it on out, as if we've taken everyone. We just can't do that. So that angled down a little bit, but still, I mean, someplace, I think you don't understand, like I said, I'm not going to say it again. We are adjourned.
Thank you, sir.